National Radio Club.
This portion of Market Scope is brought to you by your radio. Record the stations in your market and send them to Phil. You, too, can show how your community sounds on the Market Scope.
Hello, DXers. Welcome to Market Scope for July 2014. Of course, the big radio news is last month's passing of Casey Kasem and all the strange drama surrounding his last few months. So we thought we'd present some of the old Casey broadcasts from one of the coolest April 1st programs ever put together by a radio station.
Only 19 cents for a generous serving.
And now there are more than 80 Jack-in-the-Box drive-thrus throughout Southern California every evening from 6 until 9 with plenty of entertainment for you. And saluting those two teen toppers every evening, Bobby Eubanks on KRLA. And then every Sunday he unveils the KRLA Tune Decks from noon until 3 and again from 3 until 6. A Sunday doubleheader with Bob Eubanks and then Monday through Friday from 6 to 9. Here's a tune that's doing very well nationally. It's a big hit sound and KRLA is just beginning to play. I think you're going to like it. It's done by the guy who used to call himself the Duke of Earl. His real name is Eugene Dixon, but he chooses the professional name of Gene Chandler. It's called Baby Just Be True. KRLA, gonna be one of the big ones. That's Gene Chandler and Baby Just Be True to Me. It was written by the lead singer of The Impressions, a guy named Curtis Mayfield. And Gene comes up with another hit on KRLA and the Casey Kasem program for a Saturday afternoon. Big time, 7 minutes before 2 o'clock.
Here are the Hundells for Honda.
I Love You on Radio KRLA, right at the top of Bobby Eubanks' team cover list again this week. In a moment, I'll have a tune by some local lads who are the premieres, and they'll sing Farmer John.
Old Bank.
KRLA. Facebook. For the third year, La Mirada will present its annual Arts and Cultural Festival, sponsored by their own official Arts and Cultural Committee. The festival starts April 30th, runs through May the 3rd. Its purpose, to focus attention on a variety of art forms and to offer opportunities for participation and interest in all art forms. For information, phone LA13114. This one is headed for the Tune Decks on Radio KRLA. It's done by the premieres. It's called Farmer John. Premieres on KRLA. KRLA Big Time. 10 minutes past 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon with a case or two free.
Hi there, this is Dick
Hugg,
Huggy Boy. This
KRLA, it's time for $1 Million Sound right now by an actor and a singer who has probably done as much as anyone to restore folk music to its rightful place in the American music scene. Originally, he studied to be an actor and a director, but one night in New York City at a jazz club, his friends asked him if he'd get up on the stage and sing. Well, he did, and even though he had never studied any voice, he was so impressive that the man who owned the club asked if he'd like to work for him. As a matter of fact, if he'd like to sign a 20-week contract. Well, since that time, he's become the king of the American folk singers, Harry Belafonte. When he's had his share of hits and was very big. music during the Calypso craze several years ago, Harry Belafonte on Radio KRLA. And some of the other big hits that Harry Belafonte's had, a tune called Merry Merry, Jamaica Farewell, Mary's Boy Child, Mama Look a Boo Boo, you heard, and Scarlet Ribbons and Hold 'em Joe and many others. On Radio KRLA, always handpicked million-dollar music for you from all the 1110 men.
There is something new under the sun. Excitingly new. Suntan body lotion. Ask for Royal Blend today.
Just a moment, I'll play the first hit song by one of the most popular groups in concerts around the country today. The song was suggested to its producer by Johnny Hayes. That's next on KRLA. Playboy calls Chappaqua a weirdly beautiful experience. Esquire says Chappaqua is as close as mortal filmmakers can come to an exact replica of hallucination. The New Yorker calls Chappaqua a work of art, a superb feat of the imagination. See Chappaqua, a film by and of Conrad Rooks. Chappaqua in Technicolor is the Venice Film Festival winner with Jean-Louis Barrault, Conrad Rooks, William Burroughs, Allen Ginsberg, Ravi Shankar, who composed and directed the music, Paula Pritchett, Moondog, and The Fugs. See Chappaqua, now showing at Lowe's Crest Theater in Westwood. The most unusual film in recent months, says Charles Champlin, L.A. Times entertainment editor. Now from KRLA, a tune, the very first hit song by a group of lads who toured the country in concert tours and extremely successful. This suggestion of doing this song was made to a record producer named Tommy LaPuma by one of the KRLA DJs. Johnny Hayes said, "Tommy, why don't you record a song that hasn't been done in years?" He did. Sandpipers had a hit song. Sandpipers, Guantanamera, from KRLA's Casey Kasem program. On a Saturday afternoon, it's 18 minutes past KRLA. Big time. Chevrolet's Camaro will lead the nation's top NASCAR and Indy drivers across the starting line at the first big Riverside stock car race of the year. Camaro and the best racing teams for 1968 will be out there. And here's an exclusive. Free discount tickets for the 500 are available right now at participating Southern California Chevrolet dealers. They're distributed exclusively by your Chevrolet dealer, and they're free of charge. See your Chevy dealer this afternoon, and while you're in, why not look over the official pace car, Camaro, the Hugger, on display in the sports department of your Southern California Chevrolet dealer. Well, tomorrow, the Turtles, the Springfield, the Birds, the Lewis and Clark Expedition, and many other stars yet to be announced will be performing at the Cheetah in the All-Star Benefit for the L.A. Free Clinic. Kaser will be down there, and so will Reb Foster. Want to see you down there tomorrow. Tickets $3 in advance at Wallach's Music City. KRLA. The Balloon Farm. A question of temperature. The Balloon Farm from KRLA. Speaking of balloons, become your own traffic reporter, complete with barrage balloons. Listen to the hullabaloo mornings on KRLA and prove that you can take it. Tourism Program. In the Casey Kasem program, that sound is People World, done by Jim and Jean. You're swinging with a Kaser on a big 11-10.
Hi-ho, hey-hey, to your little trouble, get some soon.
Well, turnabout is fair play. I think it was Johnny Rivers who took a couple of songs by the Four Tops and put them up on the charts. And now the Four Tops may take one from a group called The Left Bank and put it on the charts. The girl's name Renee in the Southland today from the Kaser from KRLA. Don't walk away, Renee, from KRLA, from the album called Four Tops Reach Out. Four Tops in the Casey Kasem program.
There's all-star football action tomorrow at the Coliseum when top NFL stamped self-addressed envelope to How I Won the War, care of KRLA Pasadena.
75 degrees in Southland, sunny today, the same for tomorrow. Sills in the Casey Kasem program for a Saturday afternoon. Taking off with the Kaser on a Saturday afternoon from runway 1110. We can fly. They're the Cow Sills. Casey Kasem program. Last night, if you met a girl that you think is going to be yours, then this next song I'm going to send to you in just a moment.
Wow! Name bosses at 288. What a savings at Sally's now.
Shops everywhere in California with one of 363 South Mills Road in Ventura, home of the most walked about clothes in town. Well, if you met that special someone last night, you should be singing this song today. Songs for me from KRLA. That's Joe Simon. And can I quote from a letter? Dear Casey, first of all, I'd like to thank you and all the other KRLA guys for being the first to make Los Angeles aware of Proposition 13. First time I heard you play it, I really blew my mind. That comes from the fellow whose heart wrote the song. Thank you, Ben. Aerial Landscape, Proposition 13 on KRLA, the Casey Kasem program. Tonight, Pasadena Civic, Standells, two other big groups in a fantastic light show. Standells out there at the Pace Center in Ontario. Tonight. Wood and a triple play on KRLA. Non-stoppable KRLA.
Here's a sure cure for the drabs. A new way to make ugly things. And we must all get with it.
One of the very best places to get with Ricky Ticky Stickies is the General Store in Tarzana. 10 before with a Kaser on KRLA.
Make an ordinary drink exciting. Mix it with Ocean Spray. Different.
Everything goes with Ocean Spray.
Life begins at 11:10. Radio 11:10. Radio.
That wraps it up for the Kaser for a Saturday afternoon. I hope you have a pleasant weekend, and I hope you'll join me again. Until then, keep your feet in the ground. Keep reaching for the stars, and until you get the one you want, I hope you'll stay with the Station of the Stars, Radio KRLA. Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody.
That's our look back at radio on this month's Market Scope. If you'd like to contribute air checks or recordings from your hometown radio stations, send them to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. The membership would love to hear your contribution. And now, if my program schedule is correct, the members' muses are next.
Hello, I had a feeling, you'd call.
This is Musings of the Members.
Well, hello, everyone. Joe Schwab here on June the 19th from Richmond, Virginia. Just want to do a little bit of reminiscing and tell you how much I enjoyed the article about the MARTI units. I had no idea of the history of them, of course, but it was extremely fascinating and brought back a lot of memories. I would sit in my bedroom in Sumter, South Carolina, and listen to the MARTI units as they were getting ready for remotes. It was always fascinating to hear what they would be saying, the person doing the remote, to the DJ at the radio station before the remote actually began, or during commercials. Now, that wouldn't always happen because sometimes they would play records at the remote and be running just like a radio control board. But if you were having maybe a basketball game or a baseball game, you could hear what was being said during commercials or before the broadcast actually started with pregame programming. So that was always fascinating. I had no idea of the history of them, of course. Got a quick piece of information for you. AM 820 WGGM, which has been a gospel station of various different formats for the last 38 years, and has more recently been an urban gospel station. Well, tomorrow night at midnight on May the 31st, they're going to sign back on Monday morning, June the 2nd at 6 o'clock. They're going to have a talk format of some nature, and they are going to change their callers. I don't know what the new callers will be or their lineup, but I'll be back with more information on that next month. I enjoy the magazine every month, and 73s, everyone, and just keep up the good work, Fred, and have a great summer.
This is Tim Hendel. I was delighted with the article in the June DX Audio Service that tells us that maybe talk radio is losing some of its popularity. I think talk radio is one of the worst things that has ever happened to commercial radio in terms of ruining it for the average listener. First of all, the call screener won't even let you on if what you want to talk about isn't what the host wants to hear about. So unless you can fool the call screener, you won't get on. If you do get on, you're either supposed to say something like, "Mega Diddos, Rush." Do they still say that? I don't know. I remember when WHAM started its first talk show when I was maybe in high school, maybe an hour or a half an hour in the evening, and you might hear about would the city council appropriate some money for widening a local street that needed it. Maybe the manager of the local AAA baseball team would be on at the beginning of the season to talk about the Red Wings and what was their prospect for this year. Now that is talk radio with a purpose. But this polemic, which we usually get, which in the case of Rush Limbaugh, it basically everything the Republicans do is great and everything the Democrats do is awful. And on the other side, just flip the party names. So I do not understand the popularity of talk radio, and as far as I'm concerned, if we can get rid of it and move on to something else, it would be wonderful.
Hi, this is Mike in Aventura, Florida. I have a most interesting question for you. First of all, I have to give you a little bit of a background. We have a national public radio station down here at 91.3 called WLRN. They carry jazz music at night. Then they used to have a reggae program. Unfortunately, the reggae host passed away. Instead of keeping the format of reggae music on WLRN, they take off the reggae programming and they put on the BBC. Now, we have three broadcasters that host different shows on WLRN. Instead of replacing those programs with music, they're going to go all news and information. Why can't they just be music or news and information? Why do they have to drop all of the music and go all news? We have plenty of news stations down here. Thank you.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. If you'd like to muse, give us a call at area code 419-741-0205, 24 hours a day. That's for DX Audio Service members and EDXN members. Keep it brief and to the point so everyone has a chance to speak. And please tell us about what's going on in your neighborhood and your part of the world with radio.
From Tom Taylor's Now Newsletter. Dated May 9th, 2014, via Fred Volby. Fort Wayne format moves could occur soon after June 2nd when Adams Radio Group closes on two different purchases that put seven local stations into its hands. Adams CEO Ron Stone tells the News Sentinel, "Get ready to go along on the ride with us. It's going to be a lot of fun." The paper's Kevin Kilbane says any programming changes will take place quickly at some stations, later on others. So he's not taking the no changes pledge. Minnesota-based Adams Radio Group is paying $9.2 million for the Summit City radio stations and $3.5 million for the assets owned by Russ Oasis. We know that Adams would be trading away his classic hits, Rewind 106.3, WHPP Columbia City, to Redeemer Radio's WLYV 1450, and that it's swapping WGLFM Huntington at 102.9 to Calvary Radio Network in exchange for a Fort Wayne translator at 103.3. The News Sentinel says the lay Catholic Redeemer Radio programming will start on 1450 July 1st. Combining two clusters into one means some layoffs as Adams transfers the Summit City stations to the Oasis facility and will sell the Summit City studio space. The first score for the revived Adams Radio Group was a quartet of stations in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and it's waiting to close on four stations in Valparaiso, Indiana for $8.5 million. And here's a tease. Fort Wayne paper says Adams is looking into buying six more stations on the East Coast.
Sweeping cuts to VOA, RFE, and RFA shortwave services. This article was posted on June the 27th, 2014 by Thomas on the website swling.com. Unfortunate news from the Voice of America. Congress has approved major cuts to the U.S. international broadcasting over shortwave. Thanks to Dan Robertson for sharing this significant news. Dan writes, "This news is emerging from VOA late on Friday. VOA to end shortwave broadcasts in English and several languages on Monday. This was received late Friday afternoon. We were informed late Friday that the BBG's proposed shortwave cuts, that's the Broadcast Board of Governors, have proposed shortwave cuts for the 2014 year have been approved by Congress. As of the end of the day on Monday, June 30th, all shortwave frequencies for English news programs to Asia will be eliminated. We will no longer be heard via shortwave in the morning and the evening, mostly in Asia. Shortwave frequencies for many services will also be eliminated. Shortwave being used for services at RFE, RL, and RFA will also be cut. Because shortwave has been a cheap and efficient way to receive communications in countries with poor infrastructure or repressive regimes, it was a good way to deliver information. But broadcasting via shortwave is expensive, and its use by listeners has been on the decline for years. At the Broadcast Board of Governors, the cost versus impact equation no longer favors broadcasts via this medium to most of the world. Important for us is that we'll continue to be heard on shortwave frequencies during the hours we broadcast to Africa. Also, we know through our listener surveys that about half of our audience in Asia and the rest of the world listens to us via web and podcasts. So, all is not lost. Let's break the news about this change to our audience starting Sunday night. I doubt specific frequencies are critical to announce. The important point to make for our listeners is that we encourage their continued listening through local affiliates and on the web at voanews.com.
Radio 4 hosts start May Day early. This article appeared in the United Kingdom's Guardian newspaper on April 22nd. Fans of the shipping forecast on BBC Radio 4 got an extra dose of maritime coverage. When the Coast Guard asked presenters John Humphreys and Ivan Davis to broadcast to a sailor who was calling for help on the wrong channel, The Sun reports that the sailor was sending the call for help on Channel 16, which is the international radio frequency for distress signals, and the Coast Guard could hear the Today program in the background. So they gave the show a call and asked them to tell the mariner to change to the right one. A spokesman said, "We have a hotline to the BBC. They said it was the first time in the show's history that they had asked a listener to turn his radio off." In Minneapolis, I'm Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
They're singing, "Go, Cubs, go! Go, Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today."
WGN Chicago explored offering the Chicago Cubs a piece of the station, but finally said, bye-bye. Nearly 90 years of partnership between these two Chicago institutions is nice. But as the saying goes, you can't eat prestige. And under the new Cubs ownership, Tribune-owned talker WGN has been living with a very unfavorable contract that could be costing it as much as $6 million. That's a sour change from the days when the Tribune Company owned the team, and both WGN Radio and sister WGN-TV fattened up on sweetheart deals. WGN manager Jimmy DiCastro explains it for Windy City media maven Robert Feeder. "The economic thing just didn't make sense for us. So it's not really us saying we don't want them anymore. It's the Cubs saying the economics they need are much greater than what we think they're worth or what we'll pay. DeCastro says, "We were prepared to lose a lot of money, as we have over time, to stick with them as they build." Jimmy's always been highly entrepreneurial, and he says they cycled through many scenarios with the Cubs, revenue-sharing deals with guarantees, and even offering the Cubs partial ownership of the radio station. But ultimately, DeCastro and Tribune said, pass. So what happened next? CBS Radio signs the Cubs for all news WBBM, but not its FM simulcast. That's right, the News Watch reportedly won't stop for Chicago if listeners are tuned to WCFS at 105.9, even during a Cubs rally in the bottom of the ninth at Wrigley Field. That's different treatment than the NFL Bears are getting from CBS, where the football games air on both signals. But as we say around here, football is like dating, and baseball, with its 162 games and unpredictable rainouts and impromptu doubleheaders, is like marriage. CBS has signed a 7-year deal with the Cubs for baseball, and there's an important window that could change things at the end of 2015. CBS-owned All Sports Score 670, WSCR, currently has the American League Baseball White Sox. But if they leave after the end of the next season, CBS has the right to shift the Cubs over from WBBM to the Score. Ironically, the White Sox could well wind up at WGN. From Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warbrow, a long-suffering Cub fan, for the DX Audio Service.
Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League.
From Radio Insight via Sean Axelrod, with the number of progressive talk stations dwindling, yet another syndicated liberal talker is ending their terrestrial radio shows. Ed Schultz ended production of his daily 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern show in order to focus more attention on his MSNBC TV show. In its place, Schultz will host a one-hour streaming program and podcast on his WeGotEd.com website. The podcast was set to debut on Tuesday, May 27th. Schultz stated on MSNBC, "This change gives me more flexibility to be on the road to do the kinds of shows I want to do here for the Ed Show here on MSNBC. This is on me, you know. I just don't want to do a 3-hour talk show anymore."
Operating without a license, Boston pirate radio station Seek a Voice, by Ozma Khalid, May 14, 2014. Boston. Radio broadcasting without a license, so-called pirate radio, is against the law. To underscore that, last month federal authorities seized equipment being used by 3 unlicensed broadcasters in Greater Boston. The growing number of U.S. pirate radio stations has led the Federal Communications Commission to accept applications for a few new FM signals, operating legally at low power. However, the path from illegal to legal broadcasting is complicated, if not impossible. Boston's Touch is shut down. Touch 106.1, which calls itself the fabric of the black community, is one of the most well-known pirate radio stations around Boston, but you can no longer find it on the FM dial. They took all of our computers, all of our monitors, DJ equipment on this side, that side, rip stuff out of the walls, said Charles Clemens, the founder of Touch 106.1. On April 17, federal authorities took about $20,000 worth of radio equipment from Clemens' makeshift studio in the Grove Hall section of Dorchester. By 11 p.m. that night, Clemens had gotten himself back up, but only online. The problem, Clemens said, is that many of the people he's trying to serve have no way to get online. You have to understand, there are some people to this day that can't read or write, but they can listen, he said. Clemens said he's ignored repeated fines and warnings from the FCC because he wanted to make sure black people in Boston had a voice. Everyone needs a voice, he said. Boston is in the top 10 market when it comes to media. How is it possible that the black community doesn't have a 24-hour radio station? It's not right. Belltop moves around the dial. Clemens doesn't have the money to buy a license, and for years the FCC was not issuing new licenses, so he went on air with no license. Touch FM is no longer on the radio, but plenty of other pirate stations are. Just scan the FM dial on your car radio in Mattapan or Dorchester. Culturally, our people always get their news from radio, said Kiki Fleurissant, a pastor and leader in Boston's Haitian community. If you don't have this medium, the means of radio, we'll not be able to communicate this important news to the people, because that's their source of information. The Haitian community is served by several unlicensed stations around Boston, including Radio Belltop, founded by David Kang. We talk about health, education, politics, social services, you name it, Kang said. That's what we do. Kang said he's racked up about $10,000 in fines, but he can't afford to pay them. He said he's nervous after what happened to Touch FM. Right now, I am broadcasting with my heart like beating because any time they might pop up, he said. They might show up, say, David Kang, shut it off. It's not an unreasonable fear. In fact, it's already happened once before. Radio Belltop used to broadcast on 88.5 FM from Roslindale. The feds closed it down last year. A few months later, it popped up again on a different frequency. Now it's 107.5 FM in Mattapan. Two new applications with a catch. Which raises the question, how effective is this FCC enforcement policy? If they really made an attempt to evaluate what kind of a public service these pirate stations were providing on a case-to-case basis, and then authorized them, that might be a positive thing, instead of bumping heads eternally with these groups, said Professor Michael Keith, who teaches broadcast history at Boston College. Because they'll just continue to do everything they can to keep a signal out there, so nothing gets resolved. Last fall, the FCC began accepting applications for two low-powered FM stations in Boston, the first new legal stations in years. But for those already operating, there's a catch. The rules specify that anyone operating an unlicensed station is forbidden from applying. Well, the irony is that the existence of these so-called pirate stations is what prompted the FCC to say, okay, we'll legalize you, Keith said. Keith says, low-powered stations like Touch lobbied Congress for these changes in the law. But they didn't grandfather these stations that had been the impetus and the inspiration for the creation, he said. So in a sense, they were punishing these stations by saying, well, you are operating illegally, which disqualifies you from having an authorized or legal license. The FCC will not comment on the Touch FM case. But broadly, the agency says it targets stations when it receives complaints, particularly from licensed broadcasters about interference. Since January 2003, agency records show the FCC has issued more than 90 citations to pirate stations in Massachusetts. The U.S. Attorney's Office says it has shut down 8 stations in the greater Boston area in the last 3 years. Clemens, the Touch FM founder, has asked supporters to sign a change.org petition. He said he wants to take the legal route moving forward. The question is, what legal path is open to him? The FCC declined repeated requests for an interview and would not clarify what options are available to unlicensed stations to rectify their wrongs. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Chris Gay in Lexington, Kentucky.
From coast to coast, Kasem delivered more than music. This article comes to us from the Los Angeles Times and reporter Randall Roberts. This letter arrived courtesy of Sunday morning radio listeners across the country, from those millions in bedrooms and kitchens or near-car stereos whose first pop music experiences arrived through the voice of one man, a DJ named Casey Kasem. Kasem, the warm voice of the syndicated show American Top 40, on and off for more than three decades and a seminal figure in Los Angeles music starting in the 60s, through his work on local radio and television, died Sunday at age 82. With his passing, generations of listeners who awakened to his pop music sermons have found themselves without a formative educator. Each week, beginning on July 4, 1970, Kasem counted down America's hits from coast to coast. With a comforting voice that delivered each song with enthusiasm and catchphrases such as, "The hits get bigger and the numbers get smaller," he paced through the pop, rock, country, and R&B hits that made up the chart. At its peak, American Top 40 aired on more than 1,000 stations and continues to this day with host Ryan Seacrest. The result was must-hear radio. Before the Internet shattered the Top 40 template by allowing infinite access to volumes of new music regardless of chart position or buzz, American Top 40 was, with television's American Bandstand, the most prominent and enduring stethoscope monitoring the country's musical heartbeat. Just as important for those of us looking for an introduction to the world of music, Kasem and his team delivered streamlined content and history, and they humanized both the artists and the ideas driving their hit songs. As he counted down from 40 to 1 or delivered a long-distance dedication to a listener, Kasem offered trivia on chart, position, and the artist's place in the pop continuum. Here's a smash by the first recording artist we've ever known about, who's been officially named Poet Laureate of any of the 50 states, he said in July 1974. Honoring John Denver's hit Annie's Song, Kasem said that a proclamation made by Colorado's governor had named the songwriter Poet Laureate of that Rocky Mountain state. He then offered the dictionary definition of Poet Laureate, a little nugget of education nestled within the fandom. In his own way, Kasem was passing down the stories that define pop. Before cueing the Chicano band Sierra's hit in a show from early 1981, Kasem described its East Los Angeles origins. Their main support came from the Latino lowrider community clubs, organizations of car enthusiasts who would lower the chassis of their car and cruise the boulevards, he said. This week, Sierra cruises up a cool two notches on the survey with Together. The knowledge could be fun, too. Before playing Prince's When Doves Fly during a summer 1984 show, Kasem gave trivia on past bird-related hits by Inez Fox, Mockingbird, and Rufus Thomas, to the Funky Chicken. He then dubbed the dove the most named bird in the Top 40. When introducing Carl Douglas's novelty song Kung Fu Fighting as the number one song of December 14, 1974, he took a step back to examine Kung Fu culture. Such information was usually only a few sentences long, but over the course of the show, it accrued, offering boundless avenues of entry into the cast of characters that made up pop music. In the pre-internet era, such information was hard to find. As a trade magazine, Billboard wasn't geared toward your average teen, and it was too expensive anyway. Record store charts varied from town to town. In contrast, American Top 40 under Kasem was the definitive source, and each week as he ran through Billboard's pop singles chart, there was a palpable sense of anticipation. Would Bruce Springsteen unseat Duran Duran for the number one single? How far up the charts could ABBA's The Winner Takes It All possibly ascend? Granted, to rebels, Kasem's preaching felt more like some wicked indoctrination. As pop music expanded and evolved and Kasem's generation matured, his version of America seemed less relevant, and he became to many a symbol of everything wrong with reductive, market-driven pop music. To a generation channeling anger and frustration through hip-hop and punk, Kasem was someone to rebel against. He was friendly, but he certainly wasn't cool. That truth is one reason why an extant recording of Kasem berating an American Top 40 producer during a recording session went viral, and it was so illuminating. The recording captured Kasem losing his cool during a taping of a long-distance dedication about a recently deceased dog named Snuggles. His tirade shattered the facade and forever altered the DJ's carefully crafted nice guy image. But it also confirmed him as not just an invisible voice flowing through the radio, but also as a stubborn perfectionist, more than willing to be as demanding as he needed to be. And then there were those long-distance dedications, when each week Kasem dipped into the mailbag and read another Kleenex-inducing story of loss or love, then played a request. At times, they were cheesy, designed for maximum treacle. Letters from estranged lovers, high school sweethearts looking to reconnect, or soldiers stationed abroad listening on the Armed Forces Radio Network. As overwrought as they sometimes were, though, these dedications confirmed an important truth about the ways in which a pop song can gain meaning, not through mere melody, but through an exchange of emotions. He taught that a song considered disposable by one could be a lifeline for another, could embody feelings that transcended the constraints of mere melody line, could manifest profound emotions. It's similar to what many are feeling with Kasem's passing. Through peaks and valleys, through soft rock, disco, new wave, rap, grunge, dance pop, and beyond, the DJ celebrated not the hooks and rhythms that made the songs hits, but the underlying spirit that drove them into hearts and minds. And for that, Casey Kasem earned his rank and our eternal thanks.
530 kilohertz is severely restricted. Written by John Pierkins, this is a lengthened version of the story presented in an earlier issue of DX Monitor from the IRCA. 530 kilohertz appeared to be the perfect solution to solve the Canadian CBC's issue of coverage in the Canadian North. Unplanned additions of new transmitters and increases in existing power are both strong evidence that the CBC's switch from AM to FM is only making matters worse. Those of us familiar with CBC history and the importance that CBK 540 played in that history had been wondering out loud why the CBC didn't exploit the tremendous potential of groundwave coverage on 530. Any radio built in the last 20 years includes 530 as part of the AM band. The CBC came into being on November 2, 1936. As both regulator and national broadcaster, they immediately limited private stations to 1,000 watts, but grandfathered CFRB and CFCN at their current 10,000 watts, and CKAC and CKLW at 5,000 watts. In less than 3 years, they had four 50,000-watt stations of their own on the air, as well as Canada's two largest cities, Toronto with CBL and Montreal with CBF, the CBC completed two very ambitious plans for regional stations, CBA to serve the Maritimes, excluding Newfoundland, which was not yet a part of Canada, and CBK to serve the entire Canadian prairies, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. The K in CBK stands for Henry Kelsey, who was known as the first explorer of the Canadian prairies. According to the Canadian Communications Foundation, the two 460-foot radiators for CBK and CBA were the first guide radiators designed in Canada, made by the Canadian Bridge Company of Walkersville, Ontario. Both radiators were patented and were of triangular cross-section vertical design, having three sets of guy wires extending from the structure to heavy concrete anchors. Given the huge size of the region that they were attempting to cover, the CBC went a lot further with CBK. Both Sackville and Watrous were selected for their excellent ground conductivity, but CBC Vancouver engineers that we interviewed for a DX Monitor article in 1968 explained that ground conductivity was further enhanced with the addition of underground radials 1/4 mile long extending out in multiple directions from the tower. Then, of course, there was the frequency, 540 kilohertz. Bottom of the dial gave them the strongest ground wave possible. Coming on the air barely 1 month before Canada joined World War II, CBK remained the only CBC-owned station in the Canadian prairies until long after the war ended. That legendary coverage was still evident when I first visited Edmonton in 1967. At high noon in the summer, CBK had the strongest signal on the car radio dial other than the local Edmonton stations. I was 580 kilometers, 360 miles from the transmitter. In the past, exceptions to international broadcast agreements have been fairly easy to come by for northern Canada, Alaska, and Hawaii. Graveyarder CFYK 1340 in Yellowknife was 1,000 watts at night while I was working there in 1974, long before those agreements changed to increase graveyard night power from 250 to 1,000 watts at night across the board. Alaska and Hawaii were allowed 10,000 watts non-directional stations on U.S. 1A clear channels, even in an era when one station owned the frequency at night elsewhere in North America. So with all of this, why not a very well-built, high-powered transmitter to serve most or all of the Canadian North on 530 kilohertz with its tremendous ground wave potential? 250,000 watts is within existing international agreements. Maybe 1 to 2 megawatts would be considered a reasonable exception for the North. We even talked about synchronized repeaters, but wondered how SkyWave's unpredictability would impact its effectiveness. Reading the CRTC's recent decision on CIAO 530 in Brampton, Ontario, explains why we have not seen even medium power stations on the 530 frequency. In Canada, the CBC's former regulatory powers are today held by the CRTC and Industry Canada. CIAO's application documented broadcast engineering consultation and discussions with Industry Canada, and we quote, 530 kilohertz is a unique frequency because it is adjacent to the NAVTEC's maritime weather transmissions on 518 kilohertz. Due to this adjacency, the International Telecommunications Union, ITU, restricts the maximum transmitter power to 1 kilowatt day and 250 watts night. Our broadcast consultant approached Industry Canada to ask if it were possible to negotiate higher domestic daytime power by coordination with the FCC, and or whether a higher nighttime power limit could be broached at the World Administrative Radio Conference, the ITU WARC. In response to that request, Industry Canada indicated that there was no appetite to pursue such a request, end quote. Realizing that they are stuck with 1,000 watts day and 250 watts night, CIAO decided to make the best of every watt by building a single 740-foot tower on their existing site, a tower 60% taller than the pair used for CBK and CBA. And choosing a site where once sat the 10 towers requiring to run 5,000 watts on 790 when CIAO was CHIC. On March 31st, the CRTC approved CIAO's application, which has only become possible after CBEF Windsor recently moved from 540 to 1550. And that article is entitled, 530 kHz is Severely Restricted. It was written by John Pierkins and appeared in a recent issue of the IRCA DX Monitor. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Free music while it lasts. An article by David Carr, the New York Times Media Equation, dated June 4, 2014. Mr. Carr wrote this article in the first person. Late last Thursday, I stopped by a fruit stand and some big, vivid red grapes caught my eye. The vendor said a 2-pound bunch would be $6, which seemed steep. I was about to tell him as much, then I came to my senses and gave him the money. I wondered why I hesitated when it came time to pony up and realized that, as just one more participant in the something-for-nothing economy, I've grown accustomed to getting all sorts of lusciousness for the price of zero. Throughout the day, I use a suite of services from Google, email, contacts, documents, for the price of nothing. I deployed a free app called HopStop to plot my subway route to Brooklyn to meet my daughter for dinner, and then used free mapping built into my iPhone to navigate to the restaurant. Along the way, I listened to song after song on the free version of Spotify. There were some nominal charges for the data services, but in general, I was free riding. The outbreak of free is being felt all over the economy, but music is an industry that has produced the soundtrack of contemporary American life. Artists are singing the blues about the crippling effects of streaming, and no one wants to be part of the day the music died. Music has been free for decades through the miracle of ad-supported radio. But streaming services feel different because I can listen to what I want, whatever I want. The implicit promise of radio has been that consumers will hear a song they love and buy it. But when I love something on Spotify, my response is to listen to it some more on Spotify. I could pay $10 a month for the premium version and have done so in the past. But for now, I'm sticking with the free service and put up with the occasional commercial. With scarcity now gone, songs are in the air, a mist we move through like so much department store perfume. We are no longer collecting music. It is collecting us on various platforms. Spotify has doubled its number of subscribers, paid and unpaid, in the last 18 months, and reached a milestone of 10 million paid subscribers worldwide last month. In May, Pandora served up 1.73 billion hours of music, up 28% over the previous year. The two services have important differences, but they both have premium pay options, as well as ad-supported free models. And Amazon, Apple, and YouTube are all moving swiftly into the streaming space. It's a very new world with behemoths crashing in, looking for a place to profit in a regulatory environment that hasn't evolved much since before the Rolling Stones made a good record. On Wednesday, the Justice Department announced that it would review the 73-year-old agreements that govern ASCAP and BMI, which oversee licensing for radio stations, public spaces, and websites. The agencies collect close to $2 billion a year in royalties, but operate under consent decrees that they say do not give them the flexibility to negotiate workable deals in the age of streaming. Many labels and the musicians and songwriters they work with say streaming outfits risk wiping them out by paying tiny royalties. But the people who make all that yummy music are actually being loved to death by fans who expect it to be free. And it's only going to become worse. Hand a music CD to a 10-year-old and ask her what it's for. Most will never see a song as something that was imprisoned on a disc or a download that you had to pay for. And it's not just tweens. A few weeks ago, we had a garage sale at our house, and I was willing to part with only about half my books. But when I looked over my collection of CDs and thought about what I wanted to keep, my answer was, nothing. There were hundreds of them, carefully collected for more than a decade, some of them gifts, some of them even recorded by friends or bands I had written about. But they've been idle for years. I priced them at a quarter each, and then some guy offered me $35 for the whole bunch, and we caved. We even threw in the rack. Books have retained some value in an evolving personal media ecosystem, partly because the physical artifact is more attractive than the plastic CD case, which can be opened only with a crowbar. CD collections no longer signify cultural identity. LPs, which are making a niche comeback, are a different matter. When Steve Jobs of Apple decided that the price for a song was 99 cents, he saved a record industry besieged by piracy by burning about half of it down. People ceased buying albums and bought only the songs they wanted, a disaggregation that wiped out inefficiency, which is profit by another name. Between what I bought and what I burned, I ended up with about 7,000 songs. But guess what? I don't listen to those either. Why would I when I can mindlessly push a single button? I wrote a profile of Neil Young a while ago in which he railed about the loss of sound quality. But as Clay Shirky, a professor at New York University's Interactive Telecommunications Program, has said, good enough is good enough. The convenience of pushing a button on a handheld device that streams wirelessly to a speaker is always going to trump hunting down a CD with marginally better sound and plopping it into a player. Think I'm the only lazy one? Sales of digital downloads dropped a whopping 13% in the first quarter of this year, after falling 5% in 2013, which was the first year since the debut of iTunes that sales of digital music dropped. Apple has certainly noticed. Less than 2 weeks ago, it announced that it would buy Beats Electronics in a $3 billion deal that includes a fledgling streaming music service. The acquisition also included the expensive Beats headphones, $300 and up in a variety of colors, so they could also serve as fashion accessory. People will still pay large money for devices, and this weekend, thousands of people will spend up to $250 for three-day access to the Governor's Ball Music Festival in New York. It's a curious disconnect. Fans will pay top dollar for a music accessory or a music event. They just won't pay for, oh yeah, music. Writing in the Daily Beast last week, the musician, Van Dyke Parks, said that in the good old days, a song he recently wrote with Ringo Starr would have provided him with a house and a pool. But at current royalty rates, he estimated that he and the former Beatle would make less than $80, which means he will have to choose between a dollhouse and a kiddie pool and then share it with Mr. Starr. Superstars like Beyoncé can drop an unannounced bomb on iTunes and sell a million copies in under 2 weeks. But most artists are having trouble treading water in the stream. Streaming services argue that as their subscriber base grows, musicians will be able to survive on many small slices of a very big pie. On the bus ride home from dinner last week, I streamed most of the wonderful new album from Parquet Courts, courtesy of the Something for Nothing Paradox. The $6 grapes were delicious, by the way, but I consumed them slowly and consciously, each one carrying not only lusciousness, but the knowledge that I had paid for them. This has been Free Music, At Least While It Lasts, by David Carr, the New York Times Media Equation, and the article was published June 8, 2014. Now, you can email David at Carr, C-A-R-R, at nytimes.com, or connect up with him via Twitter at Carr2N. Be sure to tell him you heard about him via the DX Audio Service. From Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warrow.
And finally, if you're like me, you listen to music and you kind of wonder, you know, how they came up with a certain riff or rhythm or a certain chord structure and such. For example, the bass line in the song The Beat Goes On by Sonny and Cher.
The beat goes on. The beat goes on.
Carole Kay came up with that particular rhythm, that dun 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 dun. It was originally just going to be a walking bass line. So, you know, you listen to songs and you wonder exactly how did they do that, or what did they have to go through just to arrive at this hit? And probably one of the biggest mysteries of all is that first chord in the song, A Hard Day's Night by the Beatles. What are the fingerings for that particular song? I mean, it's you got two guitars in there and a bass. What made that sound? A lot of people have tried, a lot of people have failed. But I think one person got it spot on. Give a listen.
Okay, the most famous chord ever on a 12-string guitar. This is the one chord that everyone around the world knows. Now, Denise and I were in London last year. A wonderful thing happened. I got an email from Giles Martin, who's George Martin's son. Charles Martin invites us into the studio. So we go to Abbey Road Studio, and it's like the suite. No one else can get in there. He says to us, I have all the Beatles source tapes. They've all been put in here. In a computer, in Pro Tools. What do you want to hear? I think about it for a while, and I say, well, there's been a lot of argument and speculation, and I know guys have written little books on it. The first chord of Hard Day's Night. What is the first chord? He said, okay, I'll let you hear it. So you put up one track at a time, because when you hear it all at once, it's like bang, it's like the greatest thing to hear all at once. I heard the first chord. It was George on a 12 string, just like this, and it's an F chord, but you put a G on top, and you put a G on the bottom, and you put a C next to that G. Now, I said, and put on Paul's bass. What note was Paul playing?
D.
Paul's playing a D on the bass. And John's rhythm guitar was a D chord with a sus4, which means it got a G note on it. So now listen to this. We only did this yesterday, and it just blew me away. One, two, three, four. Isn't that fantastic? Woo! Here we go. One, two, three, four.
It's been a hard... Just to hear you say, you
That's it for the July edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio. And please support the radio hobby.
So why on earth should I moan? Because when I get you alone, you know I feel okay.